Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Band Room Podcast. No gobble gobbles this week. My name is Dylan Maddox.
And I'm Kate Nishimura.
We are in the illustrious week of the Midwest Clinic. I'm very excited. I'll be there.
I'm excited for you because it's your first time attending the Midwest Clinic. And by the time this episode is coming out, you will be there. Sadly, I will not be there, but I'll be there in spirit. And anybody who's listening to this, if you do happen to be at the Midwest Clinic while you're listening to this, go find Dylan and introduce yourself and say hi and ask about the podcast.
You can come say hi to me and the spirit of Kate Nishimura following me just above my shoulder.
You should print out like a picture of my face and just carry it around on a little stick or something.
Yeah.
And,
well, that's a good idea because these people are not a sponsor of the podcast, but I am a member of Mint Mobile, owned by the great Canadian Ryan Reynolds. And they recently mailed out little tiny cutouts of Ryan Reynolds.
Really?
So we could do that for you.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah. Happy Midwest to all the people that are there or were there. If you're listening to this after the fact, it's a great time of year and happy holidays. We're entering holiday season and winter concert season, and it's very, very busy and amazing.
There's a lot to be happy about.
Yeah.
Please do come find me. I will be the guy wearing the metallic-y looking glasses because that's all you're going to be able to recognize. And my Eugene Levy's, which I call my eyebrows. So you have those things.
And a mask.
Oh, yes.
That says
and a mask that says podcast. The Band Room Podcast, which will probably be the biggest indicator that it's me.
Yeah.
So please come say hi. You don't even need to like the podcast. Just come say hi. It'd be great to meet some new people. I don't have a booth number to give you. But anyway,
you'll just
Midwest.
Be around.
I'll be around. And, actually I will be doing some things. One thing I will be doing is visiting a booth, because we have yet another new sponsor of the Band Room Podcast. And that is Kaleidoscope Adventures, which is a band trip company, a trip company that we're really excited about partnering with, not only because it's Kaleidoscope Adventures, but we also get to work closely with our friend Keith Kelly, who's been on the podcast, and we've been on his podcast, The Global Band Room. So really excited about the possibilities and grateful for their support. We're viewing it truly as a partnership, so there's lots of things that Kate and I will be able to do with KA outside of the podcast, which is kind of exciting. And Kaleidoscope Adventures is a great supporter of kind of music education and band podcasts in general. We'll be joining the club with Everything Band. Also, After Sectionals is a wonderful podcast. And of course, The Global Band Room. And I think a couple more, actually. So please, if you haven't already, go check out Kaleidoscope Adventures. Check out their booth at Midwest. And we're happy, rather, to welcome them on as a new partner and sponsor.
Yeah. Speaking of exciting things.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we had a really great conversation with Dr. Danielle Gaudry, who is Associate Professor of Music at California State University, East Bay, where she is the Director of Bands as well as the Coordinator of Instrumental Activities. And if that's not enough, she's also a fellow Canadian. So we were really excited to welcome her to the podcast. And it was just such a great conversation about, we always talk about people who have kind of a zigzag path or even a path that might break off into many other different paths. And she is a phenomenal example of that and how that kind of experience, that kind of curiosity can lead to a really exciting career that, you might not have thought otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I think she just really embodies so much of the advice that she shared with us about staying open-minded and being ready to adapt and, to new situations, taking advantage of all opportunities that come up, even if they don't seem directly connected to, the big picture, the big goals, or what you thought you might be doing. It's just, she's such a good example of, just really being up for the journey, no matter what it entails. And it was really, really fun to hear her stories and her experiences. I feel very inspired and uplifted as a result of this conversation. So I think you fine listeners will be as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, and often we talk about, well, the past couple of weeks, even we've talked about balance. It is a very important topic when it comes to our profession and the many professions that live within our field. But, you know, today, although we may not have talked of an answer, it's I think the conversation around what we had was very important. And that you need, and that not you, the listener, can understand that everyone is probably going through what you're going through, relatively speaking. So yeah, certainly some really great conversations that we were able to have with Danielle. And if you liked that conversation that you're going to hear, what a silly thing to say. And if you like the conversations that we have on this podcast, you can go leave us a review. And how can people do that, Kate?
There are a lot of ways that you can support the work that we're doing here in the band room. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it's really easy to, first subscribe to the Band Room podcast and leave us a rating, hopefully a 5-star rating if you like what we do, and type a couple words, a couple sentences as a review and let us know what you like about what we're doing, or if there's a particular episode that has stood out for you that you feel really inspired by, or something that was said by one of the guests or one of us that really resonated with you. We really, really appreciate everybody who has already taken the time to do that. If you're listening on another platform, that's awesome as well. Same thing, make sure you've hit like, follow, subscribe, whatever the applicable button is. You can also leave us a comment on our website if you listen to the episode and there's something that really stands out for you. And maybe your comment will be featured in a future intro while we're talking about things. And we do like to read out reviews as they come in. So definitely take advantage of that if you would like. But yeah, we really appreciate all the support that you've all shown us this year. This is our last episode that we're recording of 2021. And personally, I only started as a co-host of this podcast within this calendar year. So wrapping up the first year of doing this as a dynamic duo. So yeah, thank you so much to everybody who supported the work that we're doing. We're really looking forward to continuing it all in 2022. So please leave us a rating and a review to let us know that you like what we're doing. In speaking of other ways to support the work that we're doing, we had a fantastic conversation with Danielle after the main episode for our bonus episode, and it was a good one. It was a really, really good one.
You know, sometimes I've oversold at the end of episodes about the greatness of what you would hear if you were a patron of the Band Room podcast, but my God, I really did oversell, but then I realized I didn't, because
the hype was accurate.
The hype was accurate really good for the quality of the story in which Danielle told a number of great stories from her time as a member of the Ceremonial Guard of Canada. So if you want to hear that and support the podcast in a financial way, you can do so by checking out patreon.com/bandroompod. That's patreon.com/bandroompod for more. Speaking of more, here is our conversation with Dr. Danielle Gaudry. Here we are for another exciting Band Room podcast. And today is actually the last podcast that we're going to put out before our big holiday break. And this is coming out during Midwest, which is very exciting. But today we have the great pleasure of being joined by Dr. Danielle Gaudry, who is Associate Professor of Music at California State University, East Bay, where she serves as Director of Bands and the Coordinator of Instrumental Music. Welcome to the Band Room.
Hello. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. We should probably start where we always start, which is where, why, and how did your musical journey begin?
Great question. Well, I'm originally from Winnipeg, and more specifically from St. Boniface, the French quarter of Winnipeg. So I am a proud Franco-Manitoban. And my family was very much appreciators and supporters of music. My parents were not formally trained musicians, though my dad plays guitar and he played in rock bands. And so I started taking organ lessons when I was in first grade.
Wow.
Nice.
And so you, if you can imagine, this is electronic organ. So not organ like as those of us who have spent time in academia, not what you would normally associate with organ in typical university music programs, not that. Electronic organ. And this the program that I learned from was Techniques, which was really big in the 80s and 90s, particularly in the prairies in Canada. But that was my first exposure to music. I started taking lessons, and incidentally, that was also where I learned to speak English, because before that time we just spoke French at home and at school. And I knew very early on that music was going to be my thing. I loved it from the very beginning. I had some really inspiring teachers along the way who were able to really challenge me and bring out my potential. And then when I was in fourth grade at school, there was a string program, and I joined and I learned the violin, and I kept playing, joined the Winnipeg Youth Orchestras. And when I got to grade seven or seventh grade, depending on who's listening, they ended the string program at my school, but they started a band program. And when they asked me what I wanted to play, I really had no idea, because I sort of felt I didn't have any particular affinity to any wind instrument. And they said, well, since you play the organ, why don't you play percussion, because you know how to do the keyboard, you understand the keyboard. And so that, you know, it's an easy transition. And so I became a percussionist and played in my band, until one day the teacher said, oh, we're doing this piece and we need someone to play electric bass. Is there anybody who knows how to play electric bass? And, you know, I look around the room and nobody's raising their hand. And I'm thinking, well, my dad has an electric bass and I bet he could teach me. And so I raise my hand, and, you know, after that weekend, my dad taught me the basics and off I went. And so for the remainder of high school, I played percussion in the concert band and bass in the jazz band. Nice. And I kept playing the organ. I kept taking lessons, and I was really heavily involved with the organ, you know, doing festivals and competitions. And I started teaching organ and piano. And I even at one point, I represented Canada at the World Techniques Music Festival in England. I know, when I was 15, it was a pretty big deal at the time. And now, you know, now in my current life, it just, I look back on that and I think, like, how strange, you know, all of that is so far removed from what I do on a daily basis. But, it was a big deal at the time, and a lot of fun. And I always joked about the fact that I think I was born in the wrong era. If I had been born maybe in the 1960s or something, I could have been another Klaus Wunderlich or someone like that.
There you go.
Play the organ. But so then when it came time to university, I struggled a little bit, because I knew that I was going into music. I continued to do all of those things, you know, up until the end of high school, you know, taking violin lessons and doing the Royal Conservatory and playing in the youth orchestras and playing in rock bands. You know, I played keyboards in rock bands and played bass and, you know, like any kind of thing you can imagine. I think I did it, you know, techno bands and alternative grunge bands and funk bands,
awesome.
Like all of those things. Yeah, you know, but I wasn't really sure what my path was going to be, because I didn't see myself as being an organist in university mm-hmm. and with all of that. I didn't see that for myself.
And I knew shoes. That it wouldn't
what's
work.
That?
Yeah, but Annie got to get those shoes. Yeah.
Oh, I've had shoes. I've had a lot of organ shoes. And I didn't really have the temperament to be a violinist. I knew that, mm-hmm. You know, I was happy playing at the back of the section and mm-hmm. just, you know, but I didn't see myself as a violinist, you know, as a career path. Mm-hmm. So I struggled a little bit at that point. And, you know, my dream was always to go to McGill. But being from Winnipeg and, mm-hmm. you know, everyone in my family had always, it was from Manitoba and no one had ever lived anywhere else. And the thought of, you know, the oldest daughter moving to the other side of the country alone, that was a pretty frightening thought, I think, yeah. for my folks. And now as a parent, I understand that. I get that now. But I guess I decided ultimately to start my university at the University of Manitoba as a percussionist and kind of, you know, stay home. And it was easier. It was an easier mm-hmm. transition. And, though I sort of felt at that time after a few months that it might not be the right fit for me. And so then I did finally apply at McGill and got in and, you know, through some, you know, some major discussions and all of that, eventually I went to McGill and I went into jazz performance, believe it or
Whoa.
Not. I know. like, you know, I liked playing percussion, but you know, I still had these thoughts of like, am I truly on the right path? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, I'm not going to know until I try it, until I do it. So I went into jazz performance at McGill, had a great time, made it into one of the big bands and played in the jazz combos and realized through that year that, you know, the life of a gigging jazz musician was perhaps not the right one for me. And then I, you know, sort of became enlightened and realized that music education was probably going to be a good fit for me, considering I had all of this experience and background with all these different instruments and having done just a lot of stuff, that became the thing for me. And so, so I ultimately went back to being a percussionist and finished with a bachelor in music education at McGill. And then went on to do my Bachelor of Education at the University of Toronto and then Woo! Went back home to Winnipeg to teach. And so, so my path, you know, was not a straightforward one at any point. And, mm-hmm. and I like to talk about that with my students because mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to envision where you might end up when you're first starting out. And I just like to tell people that it's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be a straight path. You can get there through many different ways.
Our friends at the Interprovincial Music Camp will be hosting their first beginning band camp summer of 2022.
Can't read music? No problem. No experience is required. All campers ages 9 to 12 are welcome.
Learn from amazing faculty like Jackie Sue and a team of specialists. They'll teach everything from instrument assembly to first notes and bring you to your first performance. You'll also get to benefit from masterclasses with world-renowned faculty to learn more about your instrument.
Don't have that instrument? Also, no worries, because instruments will be available courtesy of Long & McQuaid when you get to your first camp session. Choose from flute, clarinet, alto sax, trumpet, French horn, trombone, euphonium, tuba, or percussion.
IMC facilities are second to none with fully equipped cabins, outstanding meals, with one of the chefs dedicated to preparing meals for those with specific dietary needs.
You'll have a great time learning about music, but also enjoying a true camp experience with traditional activities such as swimming, sailing, water skiing, beach volleyball, and much, much more, as well as evening programs for campers each night after the faculty concert.
Register today at www.campimc.ca to learn a new instrument, be inspired, have fun, and make memories that will last a lifetime.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I had no idea kind of about your family background, and I'm here in my childhood bedroom. and half of my family, my dad's side is Acadian, and to think about kind of those strong musical traditions in their culture as well, and how that supports is very cool. And I was thinking, because I heard a bit about your path in a different interview, and about just what you said, how that can influence and help your students. And like so much of the time, so many people beat themselves up because they don't know. And I think not knowing is a way that we can label it, but certainly I think curiosity in many different things is maybe a better way to label it. And I think all three of us, especially you, Danielle, are an example of that, to explore all those curiosities and just to go with it and think about how that's influencing your students. I'm wondering how the whole conducting thing came into it after kind of deciding maybe to further your education after teaching in Winnipeg.
Well, through university, you know, during my undergrad, after I took my, you know, basic conducting class, I remember thinking, this is really cool. And I think I can maybe do this, you know, I really enjoy doing it and I can work hard at it. And, it's something that felt like a place where, you know, all of my experiences and my background could really help me, you know, and mm-hmm. be useful. And so even through undergrad, I tried really hard to take opportunities as they arose, became the assistant director for a Gilbert and Sullivan show,
nice.
You know, like a student production, and, you know, just did random things like that. Any opportunity to conduct, you know, somebody mm-hmm. needs somebody for their recital. Okay. I'm there, you know? And I really believed that the more I could do that, the more I could kind of put myself out there and always just try and take these opportunities, that it would really help me develop. And I really believe that it did. As I began my teaching career in Winnipeg, I continued to do do conducting workshops. I did the University of Calgary used to have a multi-summer conducting workshop where you would go for three summers mm-hmm. in a row, and so I did that. And spent like 3 weeks each summer just really focusing on improving my conducting skills. And mm-hmm. And I always had this feeling in the back of my mind that I really wanted to do a master's in conducting. But something told me that I should teach for a little while and gain experience that way. And ultimately that I'm glad I listened to that voice, because getting experience as an educator and the other opportunities that presented themselves to me, you know, while I was teaching, have really served me well. And so I'm glad in my youthful naivete that I was able to still listen to that little voice.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that voice for many people is a real voice. It might be their teacher. That was what it was for me. it's really interesting to hear that, you know, you took the time to kind of like not only develop the craft, but do the craft with real people and not just kind of go from one thing to the other.
And we've had a couple of people on this podcast talk about that University of Calgary program. So it's such a shame that it doesn't exist anymore in that form, but it's really awesome to hear from so many people that have benefited from that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It was challenging, but you learned mm-hmm. so much. You got to work with some really incredible conductors and teachers, and you really got to know people on a different level, and you got to learn a lot about yourself too, you know, being mm-hmm. put in that situation. And and what was great about it is that you were really focused on the craft of conducting for those 3 weeks. You know, you were you were just kind of living there and just not thinking about anything else, just really focused, or at least I was. Can't speak for everyone else, but I know for me it was you know, it was easier to do that in the middle of the summer where you don't have the other distractions. And but yeah, it was certainly a great opportunity. Yeah.
You're also, I think, the second guest to play electric organ. I'm really, Kate, do you remember who it was? I think it was a composer.
Yeah. We'll have to
circle
back to
this. Your world championship status.
No,
though.
No. But there was someone else who mentioned that. We'll have to go back and like.
We'll get our researchers
insert
on it.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to know. I mean, there. It was a really big thing in the 80s and 90s, and lots of people took lessons and did it. And I have to say, I mean, people laugh because, you know, it does sound like a strange thing, but I have to say that there's so much that I was able to do later in life because I had that. Because when you're playing the organ, you're not just thinking about melody, you're thinking about harmony because your left hand is playing chords. You're thinking about the bass line because your foot is playing pedals. And in the techniques program that I did, there was a huge emphasis on improvisation and arranging and all of these things that, you know, as an educator, that really served me well. You know, like I understood like jazz chords, and I understood like, kind of like the idea of arranging something and creating and improvising. Whereas my friends who took piano lessons, not to diminish piano lessons, but you know, they really had no concept of these things because that's just not part of it. You know, it's just a different concept. And so for me and the path that I took, it ended up being a really great thing. And so I'm really glad that I was able to do that.
That's really cool. And it strikes me too that, you know, playing the organ is almost like practice for playing the role of like the rhythm section and, you know, like you said, melody, harmony. So you ended up playing bass, you ended up playing percussion, and all of that actually comes together in a really nice way. Like it might have seemed throughout your journey as though all of these isolated components were not connected, but to me, hearing it now on the other side of it, it sounds like all of that was building to something that actually made a whole lot of sense. So that's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Dylan mentioned, you know, you being a Canadian working in the U.S., and we do like to talk to as many Canadians as we can through this podcast and our international friends as well. But we're wondering, as someone who has such strong roots in Canada, what drew you to teaching in the United States?
I did both my master's and my doctoral degrees here in the U.S., and I was offered the job that I am currently in when I was finishing up my doctoral degree at the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. And as somebody who grew up in Canada and spent, you know, most of my life there, the thought of the California climate was, you know, I'll say that was a really attractive part of it,
fair.
You know? But, you know, aside from that, the job itself looked really interesting to me, simply because of sort of the history of the university and the program, the music department, mm-hmm. and the people I had known who had been part of it and who had come out of it. And you know, and it was really a question of like, this seems like a great opportunity. And so I'm going to take this for now. And I don't know what it will bring later, and I don't know where I will end up later, but at that time it felt like a good thing.
And could you tell us about kind of the Cal State East Bay program?
Well, so when I got here, the sort of, I had two predecessors, one who was there for a very, very long time, mm-hmm. for over 20 years. And then there had been someone else for a shorter amount of time, just for a few years, and then some interim folks in between. And so, so there had been a little bit of a turmoil and some, the program was just lacking leadership by the time I got here.
Right.
I'll tell you, the university itself is an incredibly diverse place We are in Hayward, which is on the east side of the San Francisco Bay. So when we're on campus, which is on a hill, you can see across. You can see across the bay to South San Francisco. It's a really incredible view. And our student body is so diverse. They say that we are the most diverse campus on the U.S. mainland, though I've heard other universities say that too, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it really is incredibly diverse. Our students come to us from, many of them are first-generation college students. Many are immigrants or first-generation Americans. Many are, you know, undocumented citizens. Like, we have a real range of traditional students who come, you know, straight out of high school, and some very non-traditional students. And to me, that's what makes it just such a really interesting place to work, because it's not typical in many ways. Our music department has been renowned for many years for producing just really top-notch educators, music educators, as well as performers and composers and all kinds of musicians who go on to do really spectacular things in their career. And that was what I was really excited about, is this storied history and sort of background that the university and the music department had. And we continue to have a really strong music education program. There's a huge teacher shortage right now, especially mm-hmm. where we are. And it's really great that we're able to help guide students through that and to help them kind of embark on a really great career. But we are also in the process of trying to reinvent ourselves and trying to be more relevant to today's students, because I think what many of us are faced with now is the fact that what I experienced as an undergrad and what I was trained for in my graduate degrees is not at all the reality and the situation that my students mm-hmm. have now and the world that they're entering once they finish their degrees. And so we're really trying to try to relate to students better and be more relevant and offer things that, you know, will serve them better. So, yeah.
It seems like almost every episode we talk about the importance of community. Often maybe our guests bring it up to why they became interested in band. Community is a big part of why many of us do what we do.
Absolutely, and that's why I love our new partnership with the Canadian Band Association, to share an opportunity for you to be part of a national community of band directors, musicians, and educators.
And becoming a member is easy. By joining your provincial band chapter, you automatically become a member of the Canadian Band Association.
No matter if you're in British Columbia, Newfoundland and Labrador, or anywhere in between, there is a band association for you.
Yes, even my homeland of Prince Edward Island. They started a new one, which is very exciting. Membership benefits include access to the Canadian Winds Journal, monthly e-news,
national insurance program, national youth band audition discounts for students, access to national awards and musician certificates.
Not to mention all the great events your own provincial chapters will hold, conducting workshops, community band events, reading sessions, workshops, and more.
Support band and music education in Canada through supporting the work being done by your local chapter.
To learn more about how you can become a member of the Canadian Band Association, visit canadianband.org/chapters to find info on how to connect with your provincial chapter. That's canadianband.org/chapters to learn how you can be part of the Canadian Band community.
That's wonderful. I think it's so important that educators at all levels are thinking about how the student experience now is different from the experiences that, you know, we've all had when we were students back in the day, because things are evolving so rapidly. So I think it's really important and really great that you have that kind of focus there. We're wondering if you can tell us what led you to join the Canadian Forces, and just tell us a little bit about your work with military bands, both in Canada and the US.
Sure. Well, I joined the Canadian Armed Forces when I was an undergrad because I needed a summer job and I needed money. That was the real reason I joined. I auditioned for the Band of the Ceremonial Guard, which happens in Ottawa every summer. They do the changing of the guard ceremony on Parliament Hill, and they have a band that accompanies. And that was my entry point. I did basic training, and I did 2 summers with the Ceremonial Guard, or CG as people call it. Mm-hmm. And really that opened so many doors for me, professionally and personally, and it really changed the course of my life, I think, in many ways. After the Ceremonial Guard, when I lived in Toronto, I joined the Royal Regiment of Canada band and played with them, one of the reserve bands in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, when I went back home to Winnipeg, I joined the Royal Winnipeg Rifles band. And a few months after I joined, as a percussionist, of course, the director of music decided to step down, and they said they were looking for someone to step into the position. And once again, I'm looking around the room and nobody is raising their hand, and I'm thinking, well, I like to conduct, and I don't know if I could do this, but I think I can. And, yeah. And so I was appointed the director of music and became a commissioned officer. And, and it was one of those situations, like many other times in my life, where I saw an opportunity and I wasn't sure if I could do it, but I jumped in, and it turned out to be such an incredible experience for me. I led the band for almost 10 years as the director of music, and through that time was able to lead the band in performances, not just in Winnipeg, but across the country, overseas. We traveled, participated in all kinds of really incredible events. And it allowed me to become more involved in the Canadian Armed Forces. I spend many summers at the base in Borden, which is just north of Toronto, where I taught conducting. I taught the conducting courses there. And I led the band in the sort of the summer training blocks. And so, as a part-time job that I was able to do for many years, of course the financial advantages of doing that, of course that helps. But for me, it was a lot more than that. It really allowed me to gain so much experience as a conductor, and as a leader and as an administrator. It allowed me to really grow in many ways. It allowed me to learn a lot about myself. That's what they don't tell you when you join the military, is you're going to do a lot of thinking and a lot of soul searching and asking yourself some really hard questions, because you're going to be put in some really challenging positions, even as a musician. And, and ultimately, I felt like it was a really great thing for me. I served for 14 years in the Canadian Armed Forces. And a cool thing with that was that when I went to Cincinnati to do my doctoral degree, I discovered that Canada and the US have an agreement between the two militaries where if you're a reservist and you're going to school in the other country, you're allowed to train with a local unit. Cool. So my husband and I, who was also in the military as a musician, while we were in Cincinnati studying, we joined a National Guard band in Indianapolis, and we did that for 3 years. They made me the associate conductor and sort of the rehearsal technician, and once a month we would drive up to Indianapolis, which was only a couple of hours away, and we were able to perform and play with them, and it's just a really it was a really great thing to see things from a different perspective in a different country where so many things are similar and yet slightly different. But but that was a really neat experience too. So
yeah,
really big cool. part of our lives for sure.
I have just a really quick follow-up. Well, maybe it's not quick, but I'm curious about your experience just as a female like leader within the military. Is that something that at the time that you were doing that work was common, or was that like kind of a novelty at the time? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'm curious to hear about that side of your experience, if you're comfortable sharing anything about that.
Sure. That is a good question. I do get asked that one pretty regularly. I'll say that I think things are much different now than they were at the time that I was serving. Of all the reserve bands in Canada, I think, you know, I was one of four female directors of music. So mm-hmm. we were certainly in the minority. Yeah. There are like 50 reserve bands. I don't think that I was a novelty, because I know at least in my regiment, not my direct predecessor, but the person before him was a female, and mm-hmm. she was one of the first, certainly. So we at least had that history in our regiment. Yeah. But I'll say that being a female officer in a rifle regiment, and also being the director of music, female officer, is not always it's not always straightforward. You know, there were many times where, and also I'll say that what I had working against me at that time was that I was young. I was mm-hmm. in my early 20s when I started, and I looked young, and so I sort of had a lot of strikes against me in that respect. Yeah. So I just spent a lot of time developing relationships with my officer colleagues and with other people in the regiment, and I had to build trust. I had to really work hard to make sure that everyone understood that what we did in the band was just as valuable as a contribution as what this, you know, what the riflemen did on the parade square or in the field. Right. And that, you know, and that we were an equal part of the regiment, though what we did was different. Because of course there's always this stigma that like, you're the band, you know? Yeah. And, you know, and they think that we just sit around like singing songs and like, you know, like they, I don't know what they think, but they like their idea is always not accurate of like how yeah. hard we're working. And so for me, my approach was really to gain their trust and to show what we were doing, you know, to show that we were working hard and that we were a valuable, integral part of the regiment. And it took time. But I think ultimately, you know, I was able to create a good environment for us, as a band. But yeah, certainly being a female officer in the military, was challenging at times, and it, you know, and it, I can't say that I experienced any overt discrimination or harassment like I know some of my colleagues have experienced, mm-hmm. And I feel fortunate of that. But I will say that there, you know, in terms of microaggressions and comments and things like that, absolutely, that was there was a lot of that, and that was something that, you know, you struggle because you want to fight against that, while at the same time you don't want to jeopardize your position or your career progression and things like that. And so it's certainly a balancing act for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. Mm. I think people will find it really interesting just to hear that side of the experience. And I'm sure there are people out there that can relate to that, even not in the military world, but just, mm-hmm. you know, being female director of bands, that kind of thing as well, which there are a lot of us now. So mm-hmm. that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's such a important perspective on multiple levels to share on this podcast. And if I have any regrets in my life, it's the fact that I don't think we've talked to really anyone, barely anyone, who's kind of has a military band experience on this podcast. And it's kind of funny because both my mentors went through CG. Jillian McKay was part of CG, and so was Jason Kassler. So it's important to talk about that, and it is a pretty cool summer job and great pay.
Really?
But also just if it's going to be either kind of the bands that you're talking about or one of the Reg Force bands that we have here in Canada that are all very excellent. It's a viable career option for people that I don't think is often thought about or certainly not talked about a lot in music schools. So it's certainly something for people to look more into if there's that kind of interest in like a secure paycheck. Hey, that's a cool thing.
It really is. And I'll say, you know, the military is one of the biggest employers of musicians, believe it or not.
Yeah.
You know, as a part-time job, even if you're looking for something for, you know, as a part-time thing during the year and getting full-time work in the summer, it's incredible. Of course, the pay is really great. But for me, what really drew me in was when I joined the Ceremonial Guard, I got to play with these incredible musicians from all across the country because they recruit all across Canada. And so, you know, the great majority of those people are like university musicians or like around there, you know, of course, not all of them, but they're, you know, like-minded people who are incredible musicians and you get to be in this great big band with them. I remember some of those experiences in my first summer at CG and just being in this room playing with this giant band of amazing musicians and just being like, this is amazing, you know, and just feeling, you know, getting those like goosebumps and just thinking like, this is really what I want to do with my life. You know, when you experience that as a musician, as a young musician, despite, you know, being so frazzled because you're in basic training and you're, you know, they're putting you through all of this crazy stuff and you're, you know, you're just trying to survive and you haven't slept and all of this. But there's the trade-off that you have to do some training and there's a structure to the military, which some people like me, you know, really thrive on that, you know, having the structure and the format and just knowing what to expect, and being able to predict a lot of things that is a really great thing, but it is certainly something that I wish more people would explore because I think they would get a lot out of it for sure.
Well, that's a pretty good testimonial for anyone listening. So.
Yeah, a testimonial that breaks stereotypes. It's great.
Yeah.
So definitely check it out. And I feel like we're jumping all over the place today, but one thing that I do know about you is that in your graduate work, you researched a lot about chamber wind music. And I'm wondering how or if this research and this knowledge, did this help during kind of what we've just gone through and are going through in the pandemic when we've had to play with smaller numbers?
In some ways, yes. You know, it's helped me to maybe think outside the box and not be beholden to, you know, the idea of like, you know, everyone has to play and we have to do this full band repertoire, but just allowing myself to kind of think more creatively and think about, you know, what can we do here that will still be a valuable experience for the students while maintaining the protocols and the rules and the regulations of everything that's going on. But I think for me, what's really helped me just get through all of this is just being flexible and I don't know if that's just from studying chamber wind music, but maybe just like all the variety of experiences I've had in my life is just, you know, be ready to adapt and overcome, you know, because especially last year, you know, things were changing so rapidly. You'd plan something and then it would change and then you'd have to come up with a different plan. And so, So just being able to be flexible and adapt, I think that's served me well through this pandemic because you can't predict what's going to come next or when things are going to change again. And we're still feeling the effects of that now, you know, with this new Omicron variant and, you know, who knows what that will bring in the coming months, but just kind of being ready to change if necessary, and not being too kind of set in whatever it is you think you're going to do. So
yeah. No, it's so true. Like I remember changing plans. Like at the beginning, I ordered all this music, and then it turns out we couldn't even do it anyway. And so then we're trying to do stuff on the computers, and like I don't even know what I'm doing. But it's an important point that you bring up right at the beginning that I don't think we talk about a lot. We certainly talk about it a lot when it comes to technology and how, you know, disasters and things can often bring innovation. But certainly when it comes to teaching, just the ways that we've changed, not only through using computers and stuff, but also, as you said, just coming up with more creative methods and also kind of the amount of trust that we put into our students also has, I feel, kind of grown greatly because of this. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're all sitting here, like we want to do stuff. Like we want to play music. Mm-hmm. We want to be doing things, not just on Zoom and using all of the, you know, the multitude of computer programs and stuff. But we have all these limitations. And so it's really, you know, about how can we best serve our students while providing them these opportunities and at the same time, you know, following all the rules. And so, yeah, I think you're right.
So I think if we can sum up your story, you know, what you've shared is that you've played many different roles, worn many different hats over like every chapter of your life, from like being a student to being an educator or military work. Everything that you've done has involved doing lots of different things. And like you just said about the pandemic, like being adaptable, being open-minded and flexible, ready to pivot as needed. And so with all these different roles that you've played in your life, how do you go about balancing all of these different aspects of your life? You know, being a parent, you mentioned, and all of these different teaching roles and everything. This is sort of our classic work-life balance question, but we know there's no like perfect solution. It's just always interesting to talk to people about how they're approaching this ongoing balancing act.
Yeah, it's a great question. I feel like for my entire professional life, this idea of balancing has always been on my mind. I feel like it's been a struggle for me as someone who, you know, I'm very type A personality. I work hard. I worked long hours when I taught high school, in Winnipeg. I just remember so many late nights working and, you know, planning and preparing and, you know, and you add to that all your other responsibilities and it's a real question. And I feel that now, particularly in my profession, it is really challenging as a mother to find balance, because the profession demands a lot of you. Mm-hmm. And there is always this feeling that you should not say no when opportunities present themselves or when people ask you to do things. You should not say no. You should continue to say yes. You know, you want to lean into your career. And at the same time, you know, when you have kids, you really are trying to prioritize them. You don't want to miss watching them grow up. You don't want to miss any mm-hmm. moment with them. And so it is a real challenge to find that balance. I find it incredibly difficult, and I am so thankful that I have a supportive husband who, understands, and who, you know, he is also a musician, was also in the military, and, you know, his PhD dissertation is on musicians in the military. So,
nice.
You know, so he fully understands what I do and, mm-hmm. and supports me. And thankfully, because, you know, there's no way that we'd be able to manage. We don't have family here in California. Everyone's in Canada. And so it's, mm-hmm. It's certainly a real challenge. And I often wish that there were more systems in place to help people, like me who, did not want to choose between having a career or having kids, but are really trying to make it work, with both. I know I have many friends in this profession who are, you know, in the same position. And, and that is something that we talk about a lot, is just feeling torn and, you know, wanting to prioritize the right thing at the right time. So yeah, I don't have the answer.
There is no answer.
You don't? Yeah, I don't. We need it.
When I find it, I'll let you know. Maybe I can make some millions off of it.
Yeah. No, I remember like years ago, Dylan said something to me that I wrote down and I've never forgotten it. And Dylan, I don't even know who said it to you or if you made it up, but it just, the simple idea that balance is a verb. It's not something that we like find or achieve or have. It's something that we do. It's this ongoing act. So yeah, I don't know where that wisdom came from, Dylan, but I've attributed it to you.
The wisdom actually came from someone who's like famously dedicated to their career.
Oh, okay.
And is a female, Mallory Thompson.
Oh, nice.
Interesting.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting.
but that's a very interesting point that you raise, because I think, and I don't know if both of you find this too, but I find that sometimes I work really hard at being balanced and I feel like, okay, I'm sort of managing this. It's good. And then I will start to lose the balance, as, you know, this, for me, this is finals week. And so trying to wrap everything up in the semester and just finish everything. And, you know, we happen to be traveling next week. And so there's a lot going on and I'm finding myself out of balance right now because everything is sort of topsy-turvy. But I also think that it's really, I don't know. I feel like it's impossible to expect that you can be balanced at all times in your life. I think that's unrealistic as an expectation. And maybe that you can generally be balanced and have balance, but then there are times where, you know, things shift a little bit and then you kind of have to right the ship, as it were, like just find yourself again and get back to it, because life is that way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about the, you know, I'm a Libra, I'm not super into astrology, but when you think about like those scales, like balance is not necessarily when like both sides of the scale are at the exact same point, right? It's like a teeter-totter kind of thing. Like sometimes there's a bit of give and take. You might have to lean heavier on one side to accommodate something that's going on. And then a few weeks later, the scales kind of tip a little bit. And I think as long as we're all, I don't know, just allowing ourselves a little bit more compassion and a little bit more grace, you know, when we need to give a little bit more time and energy to something, something else is going to suffer. As long as we come back to it and we go back and forth as needed, it is just an ongoing balancing act. I think there's no perfect way to do it. And yeah, like you said, you might feel like, okay, I've got it. I'm balanced. And it's totally unrealistic to expect ourselves or anyone else for that matter, to be able to maintain that forever. So it's so important to just kind of keep having these conversations and remind each other and ourselves that it's all okay.
Yeah. And I think the idea of where we learned, because I totally agree. Like I, for a long time, thought I had to be balanced all the time. And when I was younger and had my teachers to look up to and the people I kind of wanted to emulate in my career, I see but only one side of their life. And to me, it's the balance side.
Yeah.
Not realizing once you get married, once you do things, you know, there's all of these things. Have kids, have a cat. My goodness, a cat. But you know what I mean? So like then we have to, as you've both of you just mentioned, just kind of, I don't want to say accept. I don't enjoy. I always say it whenever we're talking about this, but certainly understand that this is part of it, is a big thing.
Yeah.
I will say though that in the band world, for a long time, I felt like there weren't a lot of role models for someone like me. I didn't feel like there were a lot of people I could look up to and say, okay, she is making this all work.
Yeah.
And so that means maybe I could also, you know, there wasn't a lot of that. And my sense was that there were many people who were really excelled at their job and were really incredible conductors and directors. And, but they were male and they probably had a spouse at home who took care of the kids. And so there was, I spent a lot of time thinking about this, like, you know, if, can I do what I want to do and have balance in my life? Because I'm not seeing it in a lot of places here. Yeah. Like, I'm not seeing a lot of examples where that is true, you know, and what you said, Dylan, about, you know, you're only seeing one side of it. You know, that's true. You're not necessarily seeing the whole picture. And so thankfully, I think we now can look around and see a lot more diversity maybe in our profession in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, different kinds of people and how they achieve balance and what their life looks like. And that makes me really happy that we, I don't know, there are more people who are doing, you know, who are, it's not the same sort of stereotype that we had seen for so many years, but there's just a lot mm-hmm. of, a lot of different kinds of people making it work.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's exciting.
And it definitely helps, you know, the three of us all have partners who are also musicians. And I think that that's incredibly important as well, because if, you know, I imagine having to justify the long hours and the priorities that don't make sense to non-musical people, you know, like having to constantly explain that or justify that would just be an added pressure, an added source of stress. So I think that's also incredibly helpful to just have people, whether it's a partner or friends or family, like people in our corner that understand what's important to us. That's incredibly helpful as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I might plug our own podcast, we've also had, I know, it's like we've also had like this discussion a couple of times, mm-hmm. With two wonderful people, Wendy McCollum and also with Angela Schroeder. So if you want to
both
check
Canadians
out those discussions
too.
As well, mm-hmm. and both Canadians, both rock stars. Yeah. And, but yeah, so definitely go check those out. And we've sadly come to the last question of the official episode, but I will remind our listener or listeners that we are going on to bonus episode land, where Danielle is going to blow our minds with the greatest bonus episode to ever happen.
No pressure.
I don't know that, but it might be. So
gotta hype it up.
You can know that. Yeah, you can know that if you become a patron of the Bandroom Podcast by visiting patreon.com/bandroompod, where you can hear this episode. Not this episode. The episode we'll record and many other episodes. Anyway, so the last question is, Danielle, if you could give one piece of advice to up-and-coming musicians, conductors, educators, what would it be? And if you got two, hey, we'll take it.
One of the best pieces of advice that I can give is that you should always take every opportunity you can if you can make it work, because you never know what that will lead to, what you will learn by doing it, who you will meet. But I feel like that is something that I have embodied, you know, even when I was in high school and through my mm-hmm. undergrad. I mean, the number of random things that I have done in music, I think would make you laugh. I mean, honestly, I have played in a pipe band. I've played in a klezmer band. I've done some like Moroccan music. I have sung in women's chorales. I have played in the Himalayan drumming ensemble. I mean, wow. Honestly, I have done all of these random things. But and of course, many of those things, you know, I never intended on that becoming something greater than just, you know, somebody asked me to do this gig and I did it and it was fun. But, mm-hmm. But like having this wealth of diverse experiences have really helped my perspective in where I am now and who I teach now, and just kind of understanding the larger world of music, that it doesn't just exist in this bubble that we sometimes live in. But taking these opportunities, you know, as I kind of talked about, as a young conductor, you know, somebody would say, is anybody available to conduct for this rehearsal? You know, and I'd be the first one to raise my hand, you know, and of course there's that like negative voice in the back of my head saying like, you can't do, you don't know what you're doing. What are you doing? Why are you raising your hand? But then the other part of me is saying like, yeah, but this is how I'm going to learn how to do it, is just by putting myself out there and doing it and mm-hmm. taking every opportunity. And it did. It did. For me, I feel like it really paid off in a lot of ways. So just taking those opportunities, even if they seem unusual and, you know, and maybe not, you know, they're maybe not the paid opportunities. You know, I feel like there's such an emphasis these days of like, nobody's paying me for this gig. I don't want to do it, you know, mm-hmm. but who knows what that gig could lead to, or who you will meet, mm-hmm. or who you will influence, what impact you could have. And so, I'm a big fan of just going for it, you know, whenever you can. Of course you can't always, but whenever you can, go for it.
Yeah. You have absolutely embodied that advice in everything that you've shared with us.
Walking the talk. Yeah.
Definitely.
No, and beautiful advice to kind of end this, our time together. And it's really been such a treat to get to know you just a little bit more, and not just to see you as one of 30 people on a Zoom call. hearing about your path and hearing about the way that you talk about teaching, it makes me incredible, not jealous, but I guess lucky for your students that they get to learn from you and have a teacher that is willing to kind of explore those curiosities with them, because that's what you were and that's what you got to do. So thank you so much for sharing some really important reminders with us this afternoon, and thanks for being on the podcast.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed speaking with both of you.
Thanks so much for spending time with us in the band room. If you want to learn more about anything we discussed in today's episode, check out the links found on our website, bandroompod.com.
If you liked what you heard, make sure to subscribe to the Band Room Podcast, give us a rating and a review, and tell all your friends about how much you enjoyed it.
If you really love the show, maybe you should consider becoming part of our Patreon community, where you can support BRP and get some extra incentives in return. Or you can buy some sweet, sweet BRP merch, helping to offset podcast hosting costs and investments into new equipment, so that we can continue to bring you great content and great people.
Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to keep up with what's on the go. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, leave us a comment on our website, bandroompod.com, where your comment might be featured on a future episode of BRP.
The Bandroom Podcast is produced by the wonderful Jonathan Wong.
And our theme music is Skyline, composed by EKR Hamill and performed by Dr. Gillian McKay and the University of Toronto Wind Ensemble.
Stay safe and be well, bandies. Thanks again for stopping by the Band Room.